This week, Art in the Air presents a special podcast edition saluting the life and legacy of the very definition of an artist, John Brabant Lending, who lost his courageous battle with cancer on December 26th. Known for his unique brand of abstract expressionism that he's been practicing since 1975, Brabant has a storied life that he readily shared with us in his two Art on the Air interviews.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome you to a special edition podcast about our wonderful friend, John Brabant Lending, who just passed away December 26th. You know, just known for his unique personality plus his great art. And we've had him on two interviews for Art on the Air, which we're going to play for you in just a moment here. But Esther and I are just thinking to have some memories of his influence in the local art community. Right, Esther?
Oh, most definitely. He's been a long time. I met John about 20 years ago when he and his brother walked into an art gallery I was working at, and he walked in with a swagger, of course. He was wearing a black crew neck shirt with a yellow artisan crafted necklace with a smiley face on it. And I complimented the necklace, and he said, "The chicks really dig it." The combination of the brothers together was quite an experience. And from then on, we kept running into each other at odd places, train station parking lots, other galleries, and we always had enormous laughs and talks. He was passionate about art and the art world. Jeff Koons, if your ears were burning, there might have been a few conversations. We had some marvelous collaborations as well, which I will always treasure. And I have a few flash drawings that I adore. He always ended every phone conversation, probably with everyone, but with me, saying, "I love you." And I always said, "I love you back. I love you back, John. Happy trails and say hi to Dura."
And my memories of John is maybe not quite as long ago, but on First Fridays in Michigan City, going to the FADA, the Franklin Arts District Gallery, and visiting him there, and always friendly. He's friend to artists, and we're seeing that on Facebook currently. And to me, if you go to the dictionary and look up artist, you'd see a picture of Brabant right there. We're going to start off with episode 6. We excerpted on November 23rd, 2018. He was in our 6th show with us. And then later on, he came on episode 68, which was February 7th, 2020. So here he is. And thank you for listening to this special podcast edition of Art on the Air. Well, Robert, tell us about you. You have an interesting story coming to us as an immigrant long, long time ago.
Yeah, a long, long time ago, we left the Netherlands. I was born in Zetten van Bos, which is actually a kind of a mysterious city or town. And it's the birthplace of Hieronymus Bosch back in those early 1500 or something like that. And it feels funny, but sometimes I feel like, and I don't believe in this stuff, but sometimes I feel like Bosch is with me because he some people have actually said, hey, I think I feel a Bosch in this particular piece, but I don't know where it comes from because I never have any preconceived ideas of anything like that. But we ended up in Winnipeg, Canada in 1953. My dad was he's trying to get a job at Ford Motor Company as a tool and die maker. It didn't happen until 1956 when they called him in outside of Chicago with a South Side stamping plant. And that's when we ended up on the south side of Chicago. And that's how I ended up here. So that's that. But I have a studio, too, at Franklin in Michigan City, 617 Franklin. And I have various hours, so it's probably best to call me first. But I don't always answer my phone. But can I give out the number?
Oh, but sure. I mean, I was going to ask you to do that, and we'll do that several times.
312-203-9728.
Give that one more time.
312-203-9728.
So you're quite well known these days for your early morning flash drawings, like at 3:48 a.m.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that after being up all night and then
No, I don't sleep not well, and especially now after I had surgery, I don't sleep as well. But I get up and then I go into the kitchen, make a brew of fresh product coffee. And then I go back into the home studio, and it's a mess in there, but I bet over 3,000 flash drawings that are unmounted right now. And it's a real process. The only thing is, because I'd rather be doing artwork instead of doing the other, it's a real process to mount these things. And I use Twin Rocker handmade paper from Brookston, Indiana. And the price skyrocketed because I have the heavy grade that I mount these lighter grade pieces on, and it's I'd rather be doing painting and stuff. So those flash drawings in the morning are nothing, because I really enjoy it. I have the cup. Sometimes I gotta watch where I put my cup. I just take whatever brush, and I got all kind of pots of paint. I just go, and sometimes I do this technique with pastel. And I wiped the pastel across there. And I found, I created a technique where I used this light oil. It's like, it used to be known as a typewriter oil or dental oil that they used for before, when they used to still put the tools in the autoclave. They used to coat them with a light coating of oil before they put them in the autoclave. And that's the stuff I use with, I put a small amount. If I use pastel and I go over it with a small brush and do all kind of gestural things, I let that kind of dry, and then I'll go in with the more acrylic paint and sometimes oil too. I just mix them all up, and it's just automatic. I mean, I can't explain how it happens. It's just in me. I mean, and then some, personally, I don't like some as well as others, but I post every one of them that I do because there are people that like the ones that I don't like. <That's> and it kind of makes sense being in a non-really metropolitan art area like New York or something, because everybody has their own taste out here more so than, I'd be probably really getting bashed if I was in New York City and they'd say, God dang, yeah. Well,
you're all over the place.
All over the place, man. Damn.
Well, you need to mark your cups. One is coffee and one is for the brush. Put a label on that.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to do like the Stooges did then.
That's right.
Sounds like it's time for an intern,
Yeah, and the other thing, I did a little research on it myself, but I was born in what they have a Brabant province,
right,
north and south. And I was born in the one closer to the Belgian border, because Sette van Bos was closer to the Belgian border. Right. And just one day, maybe 10, 12 years ago, I said, dang, I had just come back from New York. I spent a whole week there, and they kind of just ignored me. They said, oh, you're... And me, I don't want to call myself an idiot, but he said, where are you from? They said, Indiana. And immediately they thought I was a corn farmer or something. So they said, we'll file this. I said, yeah, okay, please do. Now, if I would have told them, it might have been a whole different story. I said, I was born in Sette van Bos, which I was, in the Netherlands. They would have probably said, I think.
Oh, a little interesting here.
Right.
Interesting. No man is a prophet in his own land.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what they say.
So, Brabant has got a real noble thing in the...
Oh, yeah.
So when did you take on that moniker?
Oh, about, I want to say almost 10 years ago.
Okay. Because I mean, I think
I came back from New York and I said, I'm getting nowhere. You know, John Lenting and where are you from? Indiana. Oh, corn farmer.
It was the longest time before I knew your first name was John.
And you so, know? Yeah. And so, you know, I said, I talked to my brother about it. He said, yeah, why not? Just use Brabant. And all of a sudden, the galleries, they were not interested in me anymore, started getting interest. Oh, you got to have a show here, and you know, and even in Chicago and that. And I said, dang, look at
well, you do, you do have that story about the New York gallery not wanting to let you into the show, and then you called in again with...
Oh, no, that was Richard Gray, actually. That was back in the day. There were Lucas Samaras was showing there. He did stuff with Polaroid, you know, configuration.
Manipulation of the, yeah, the surface, yeah.
And I wanted to get in there, but it was by invitation only, the opening night. And I was in Chicago because I worked in Chicago, and I said, dang, what I can do? So I called him up. I called up the gallery, and I disguised my voice. I said, hey, and, listen here, I'm a flying in from Germany, and... I am a really big fan of Lucas Samaras, but I had no idea this was going on. So is it possible that I can attend? Yeah, they said, yeah, come on. But first, oh, yeah, I left that out. First, I went right there, and I was buzzing the door, and I had my jeans on and everything, and they wouldn't let me in. I was buzzing, they, you know.
So you thought you just got off your tractor?
Yeah, on my tractor, or I was some homeless guy maybe looking to get something. So I went back to the car. I had a change of clothes. I had a suit coat and everything else. And so that's when I made the call, you know, not cell phone, just regular, you know, telephone, phone booth. And when I came and I announced myself, I was all, yeah, I'm, you know, so-and-so and to let me in. So I had a nice evening that night with Lucas Samaras and all the people from Richard Gray Gallery. So it was quite nice.
Very nice.
Fantastic. You're listening, by the way, to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM. And again, we're streaming online at WVLP.org. Our guests today are Brabant Lenting. One thing I always talked to Brabant about is his service outside of art. You were in Vietnam.
Fortunate. I did two tours of Vietnam. On a great big battleship, World War II era, USS New Jersey, BB-62.
Mm. Right.
And the funny thing is, when I got out of Annapolis, Maryland, I wasn't a midshipman. I was helping the midshipmen on sailboats in Chesapeake Bay. But I got orders after that land station to the Mediterranean to a flagship with the admiral that was really well known. And then... a week later, they said, sorry, kid, you're going to Vietnam.
Oh, no.
Surprise!
You're going to the Philadelphia Naval Shipyards to recommission the USS New Jersey. So that's what we did. And after we got it all going, we stopped in Norfolk, and then we went through the Panama Canal.
Wow.
And that was, I don't know if that was a first, but it was a real tight squeeze. I mean, all these deckhands had big fire hoses, and they were on both sides, you know, just for the friction, because this ship had 18-inch armor steel plating. And so we landed up in San Diego and then Long Beach and then on to Vietnam, off about 6 miles off the coast. I was lucky because we were laying on a deck one day, a bunch of us, and the captain says, general quarters, they're trying to hit us with something. They were like shore batteries, and they were missing quite a bit. They were just going like, you could hear them, sploosh. So we all went. The captain ordered a broadside that way, you know, with those big 16-inch guns and stuff. And after about less than 5 minutes, it was all
over.
So, you know, but that's primarily what we did. And the only other action that I had was that a Russian MiG, which the North Vietnamese had access to, came at us. But we were also retrofitted with surface-to-air missiles. The missile got it. But I was an engineman, and my duties were both lifeboats, the motor launch. When we were in docked, I was doing the captain's gig. And I also drove the captain's car with him, the black little Navy car. And so it was actually a good duty, you know, but I just I was fortunate. But I did two tours back and forth, and we spent a little time off North Korea, too, on the way back. We had to turn back on our way to San Diego because they had shut down some jets or something. I don't even remember, but we had to take up station by North Korea.
So did you do art while you were on the ship? What kind of art did you do? Was it what materials did you have available?
When I enlisted, I said, what do you do, kid? And I said, well, I like to do graphic design and stuff like that. Oh, no, the civilians are taking care of that. This is wartime, he said. You have to choose something else. I said, well, I like to work our cars. Nah, not much gasoline, diesel. I said, okay, diesel, you know. So I ended up working on diesel engines and stuff. And then they knew my art background. So one time they set me in a room all the way down below all by myself. And we had gotten these Davy Jones certificates. They were all calligraphic, you know. Mm-hmm. And they said, hey, you're the artist. Huh? Let's put you in this room and you can do script, you know, sign, put these guys' names on this big certificate of Davy Jones.
You were a calligrapher as well?
Yeah. Hmm. And so I did those for over 2 weeks. They had me shut in there, you know, doing all these hand by hand. And then they knew all about me. So when Bob Hope came on with Anne Margaret offshore, they said, hey, you got to make a banner for the front of the turrets, you know, where the stage was set up. So I did that. Then I also doubled as an escort when they arrived by helicopter. I escorted Bob Hope and Anne Margaret and her husband at that time. So I took them to the front, the forward section of the ship where the stage was at. And Bob Hope was a nice guy. So was Anne Margaret. But Anne Margaret's husband at the time, not so much. He didn't like the sailors whistling at his wife.
So. And that's what it's about, right?
And that's what it's all about.
So, but what about personally? Did you document your time there personally with the drawings or a diary? Or because I've met a lot of Vietnam vets who even when they were out would just have their pencil and paper and do drawings, you know, and would have to, it was really hard to keep them dry. I remember
I would do more cartoons than anything else. Mm-hmm. I got in trouble I didn't really get in trouble in the Navy, but more so in the afterwards in the steel mill. I used to draw the plant superintendent, and I'd call him a genius. And I put him in real stupid situations. And he didn't appreciate
it. There's that boss coming out again right there, that imp.
I put it on the bulletin boards in the machine shop and all over the steel mill, and he caught wind of it. I don't appreciate that stuff. He said, you know, can you just control yourself and that? I said, okay, I won't do it no more, but I did it in the Navy, too. A lot of cartoons of fellow shipmates and stuff.
But caricatures?
Caricatures.
Well, I know I've said it to you personally before, but I'll say it on air. Thank you for your service. Vietnam veterans never got their parade, you know, when they came home. And it always breaks my heart, you know, because I was just after the Vietnam era. But, you know, but I always – anyone that served in that war.
You know, I enlisted because I got orders for Fort Knox, Kentucky, in infantry. And I said, oh, no, not me. So I went to see my friendly Navy recruiter, and he was glad to sign me up for 4 years. So that's how I ended up. But I saw, you know, I'm glad of it because I saw a lot of the world. I saw Hong Kong, you know, different ports, Tokyo, you know, even as far as Australia and stuff. So it was a good learning experience for me.
Yeah.
And I got to serve somewhat my country, you know. So.
Well, we appreciate it.
Talking about egg tempera.
Yes.
I had a student at the School of the Art Institute. I befriended him. His name was Andrew Young. He got very sick on oil paint. He almost died. And I used to visit him after he got out of the hospital in the studio. And he said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I said, there's 1,000 mediums. Andrew, you got the talent. I went on for a couple of years. All of a sudden, egg tempera. And this guy was so good at egg tempera that in no time, he was shown internationally, New York, California, places in Arizona, New Mexico, Germany, and I just saw him not too long ago, and he said he got tired of the gallerist demanding a certain kind of thing in his egg tempera, but he was a true artist. He wanted to keep going. He said, so now all I do is I curate shows, but he just had a show at the Arboretum, the Peggy Norderband.
Yeah, Norderberg. Yeah.
Norderberg in Chicago, a show of his, egg tempera paintings. And a lot of them are now, the new ones are all floral. The earlier ones were with like birds and stuff like that, because he's really a naturalist. That's another thing, you know, he had an art degree, but he was also, ecology and study of birds like Audubon.
Right,
all that. And he's not showing anywhere anymore, except museums like the Peggy Norderman. They asked him to show. It would be nice to have my name in print on a forward, you know.
Right, right.
Well, you, your work, you use this very... thick cardboard also, which
is... it's three-quarter inch corrugated.
Yeah.
I picked that up. That was like, you know, the starving artist thing. And there was a plant in Dalton, Illinois. My brother knew the guy that was the plant manager, and he knew I was an artist. And he told my brother, get your brother over here, man. He said, we're moving to North Carolina or South Carolina. So I went over there, and he showed me all the, you know, the three-quarter inch corrugated. He said, here, man, I give it to you. You know, it was real reasonable price. So I got a pickup truck. I loaded the pickup truck up, and I started working on that. And now I've come to a point where I even laminated with canvas or cloth, and it holds up. I mean, if you treat it right, if you gesso it with an archival, type gesso, it holds up. I mean, and it's lightweight. It's nice. You know, so that's how I started working on that. I also have canvas work and, of course, paper, but I really enjoy the feeling of that that cardboard, you know. Like Greg Hertzley, when he came to the studio, he said he was attracted to one painting. It was like, he said, what did you use, a big brush? I said, yeah, I was loaded with paint, and I just went, gish! Yeah, look, it dried real nice, he said. I said, yeah, well, you know. But it's all just the act of painting. It's a lot like Pollock for me, or automatism, you know, where it's automatic. There's no pre-thought. I mean, that's just the way I like to work now.
They're moody like that, too. You can moody, almost, yeah, they're very moody every single day. Yeah, there's like a different mood or...
the mood, whatever. Sometimes I'm
your color palette. You'll stick with a color palette for a while, and then all of a sudden it abruptly changes.
Me, because I never really say, well, I'm going to use this color today.
Today's
I just
pink
automatically
and blue day.
Go.
Yeah.
And it must convey from inner self my mood for that day. I don't know any other way to explain it.
Did you say you have 3,000 of them?
Yeah, all, but that's all.
Are you documenting them? Yeah. I mean, on the back? I mean, like, so you can catalog them? And
I'm too lazy. I just like to do the work. I got piles in my studio, piles and piles and piles.
Sounds like a job for your brother, Giuseppe.
And it's a job. I asked him one time to help me when I was doing women's apparel. I said, can you cut out this this pattern?
Well, not me. He said, I can't even cut a straight line.
I said, well, here, draw some of these patterns. And I can't draw a straight line and everything. All he wanted to do was sit at the desk, smoke a cigar, put his feet up, and collect the money.
Robin, we didn't talk about your training background. You were at the University of Chicago, and then ended up at the Art Institute. Then worked there.
I got accepted back right out of the Navy to the School of the Art Institute. And in those days, everybody told me, forget about it. You'll never get in. It's real rigorous. Well, I got accepted. I enjoyed only 2 years there. I'll tell you, Christina Ramberg was one of my first drawing instructors. She came up to me one day. I was John then. She says, John, are you familiar with, what's that German painter? I just had it on the tip of my tongue. Well, he does these large women. Oh, Richard Linder. No, I said, no, who's that? She said, he's a famous German painter, you know. Look him up. There was no computer, so I looked him up, and I told her the next day, no, I don't think so. But now, years after, I see Richard Linder coming out of me, literally, when I do some of these figurative abstracts. They're huge women, you know. They almost, some of them almost look circus-like. And that was Richard Linder. But then it got too expensive at the school because they had, private tuition. And all the money I was getting from the Navy, I was giving to the Art Institute. So a buddy of mine who was going to Circle said, hey, come check Circle out. They got a nice art program. So I said, and Illinois State Scholarship will take care of your scholarship. So I went with Roland Ginzel and Dan Ramirez. And I love those two guys. I mean, we knew each other our whole life, you know. So one day we were in a studio class over by across from the Bay's English Muffin building. They had studios there. We were all set up. I used to bring a real big canvas already, even house painting brushes. And he stopped the class. It's honest to God truth. He said, class, stop. Watch John over there. And I was going, whoosh. Because they were all going, you know, real tight and stuff. So that's, and then the last thing I did for him, he said, my graduate thing, I found some old conveyor line belt in a junkyard. It was heavy treated conveyor line. It was heavy canvas, about this thick. And I was cutting it up with a knife in different shapes, and I was putting the shapes together with different colors, like color field. Roland said, hey, where'd you get that stuff? I said, you want some? I got him some, and the next week I brought him a whole bunch, and then Roland had a show at Dart Gallery on Superior, that area that burned down.
Mm-hmm.
I went to see his show. He was a color field guy, and he had all these, this conveyor line belt lodges just glued.
Art in the Air continues its special podcast edition saluting the life and legacy of John Broadbent Lenting. And now we hear his second interview with us on February 7th, 2020, episode 68.
So we'll go ahead and kick over to John, otherwise known as Broadbent. And yeah. You should tell us that the story of how you got that, but maybe just pick up where your Giuseppe left off there. So you're at the Art Institute.
Yes.
And
I started as a guard, you know, and I had a degree from Circle Campus, a BFA. Studied under Roland Ginzel, a very well-known, one of the first color field painters in Chicago in the 50s. Nobody wanted nothing to do with it because they were all into the Harry Who, the Nonplussung, and those kind of, you know, groups. So I went there for a teaching job at the Art Institute, but all they had was part-time, and it was for continuing studies. The salary was bad. I had a family at the time, and I said, man, I can't do this. So I walked to the job board, and I said, assistant director of campus security. I don't think I have any of the qualifications, but I'm going to go for it. So I went. There were 17 other candidates. Well, evidently, the director of student affairs, the president, Tony Jones, Peter Brown, it was a unanimous decision to hire me as assistant director. And the funny part of it was Felice Dublon, who's still the student affairs director, said, oh, yes, but John can protect our students because he was in Vietnam. And I said, I didn't know how to say, I didn't say nothing. You know? I said, yeah, okay, sure. So, you know, I ended up there 17 years. I had quite a good time there. I mean, I apprehended two thieves on my walks. You know, one guy was in the 112 Michigan building, which is one of our school buildings.
Right.
Got some lady's purse. I went after him through the revolving doors. I said, stop! I didn't have a gun, but I went like this. Stop! The guy got all panicky, and then he kept going. So I kept going after him. I tackled him around the knees and brought him down. Ripped up my good suit pants, brand new suit pants.
Oh.
I was bleeding, and you know, the Art Institute never reimbursed me for my slacks.
I know being a superhero is tough.
Yeah, I know. And then there was another one where some guy tried to hijack. I don't know why. They had a lot of homeless there, and this was at the Wabash building.
Right.
I was in the lobby talking to my security guy officer, and the guy come in and grabbed one of the outgoing mailbags. Security guy didn't do nothing, so I went out to the revolving doors again. It was dark out, and I crouched down. I said, "Stop! Drop that bag!" The guy dropped the bag and kept running. So I got accommodations for that. I got at least two accommodations.
You have a powerful hand there with no gun in it. He can hold that gun.
No gun.
So during that time, are you able to take classes the Institute and
I took some
to keep up with your art?
I took some with Molly Moore, who was did graphic design.
So that's the person that helped put you in Facebook jail all the time, huh? Yeah. With your graphics.
Molly, yeah. Oh, he was mad at me, you know. He said, "Come on, Lenting." He said, "You got a PC at home? You're so talented. I saw your work that you did by hand in the 60s and 70s. He said, "Get an Apple Mac." So I didn't listen to him. I got another PC. He said, "Get away from me." He said, "Yeah, I told you to get a Apple Mac, but no, you got a PC, so just forget it," he said. So that was that. But earlier on, too, beautiful lady, Christina Ramberg, who died early. This was back in the 70s when I first went to the school. I spent 2 years there, then I went to Circle. But Christina Ramberg liked my drawings, and she told me, and I didn't know. I was a kid out of the Navy and stuff. And she said, "John, do you know your drawings resemble Richard Linder?" I said, "Who the hell is Richard Linder?" She said, "Look him up. He's a famous German artist. He does heavy set women and, you know."
Rubenesque.
Rubenesque. I looked him up, and I said to myself, "No way. Where did she see that?" But that was Christina Ramberg, who was, you know, part of the Harry Who Nonplussum. She's actually getting a lot of notoriety again in New York City. Christina has had a few exhibits since he passed away, so they're starting to recognize her work from the Harry Who. She used to do these lacy drawings of, like, undergarments and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I loved it at the time, but she died so early. She was married to the painter.
Well, while you're thinking of it, we're listening to Art in the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. And you're hearing the Lenting brothers, John Brabant and Giuseppe. So
during that Art Institute
Philip Hansen was his name.
Okay.
Philip Hansen. Well-known artist.
So what type of work were you doing then? I mean, because your work, I'm sure it's not the work like the work that you're doing now necessarily.
I used to do a lot of what I call Dubuffet overlapping heads, you know, in that archaic kind of a style. Then I did assemblages. I've done sculpture and even minimalism in my first studio in Park Forest. And that's not easy. You really have to have the sensibilities to do a good minimalist piece. They're layered, and you have to see the colors come through somehow, and you can just tell a good piece. There was a whole movement of minimalists who were excellent, but then there's people that tried it, and they were just complete failures because it's not minimalism. So
I know, because now you're using – a lot of your paintings are on, like, industrial cardboard, and
right.
It's so good.
3/4-inch cardboard, which I'm almost running out of. My brother Joe got me to hook up with that in Dalton, Illinois. The plant was closing. They were moving to South Carolina. And he told him, he said, "Get your brother over here. I know he's an artist." So I went over there.
I knew the general manager, so he said, "Maybe your brother can use this stuff." I said, "I don't know. I'll ask him." They had a whole factory full of it. We bought a whole truckload. Now he's kind of running out of it. Well, he's got a mass of work, you know. He got a lot of work there, so.
Yeah, that's the problem. I got to start. I've lost track of the people I knew in Chicago, and I want to reconnect because I know the quality of my work, it speaks. And, you know, just like recently, I put my stuff on LinkedIn, these little drawings I do every morning, or flash drawings.
Flash drawings, yes.
And, man, it's just professors and curators. They're all talking about it. I love you. You're a natural, you know. And then the guy that introduced me, the first one that found me was Robert Chapman. And the next day he puts a comment on my one flash drawing. He said, wow, Willem de Kooning would have said, that's the cat's meow.
I said, well, that's a great compliment.
That's a compliment.
That's a great compliment.
And he continues to this day to relate. He said, man, you're a masterful. I said, don't say that. I'm just an artist. I love what I'm doing, you know, and stuff like that.
The flash drawings allow you a different palette at times. So yes. It's almost like I gauge your moods every day by your flash drawings.
Yes, they are, because they're done at right around 4 in the morning, and I get into my little home studio, and, man, I've accumulated so many flash drawings. I don't know. I got to figure out a way to market them, but it's hard because I have to mount them on handmade paper. Then I have to, you know, set them up so with the archival glue, with under pressure for, you know, at least a day. And it's all work, and I don't like work. I like to play on a canvas, you know.
Because your work on the you have like a very definite palette when you're doing your larger pieces, and so I know it's like.
And that's, I told Robert Chapman the same thing, and he was, oh, by the way, he was the Willem de Kooning's assistant for 10 years.
Oh, well, then that's like an extra amazing compliment.
From 1980 to 1990, and I looked him up. I thought first he was BSing me, but no.
He was, I think, Willem de Kooning. De Kooning's a crush of a lot of us, I think. Yeah.
I think I truly loved him, you know. Yeah, I said, to the day he was doing with the Alzheimer's, he was just doing strokes. You know, they were still powerful. I saw him at Larry Gogeshan Gallery in New York a lot of years ago, and
yeah, you should tell the story of how you got in to see that exhibit.
It just moved me, man. I walked in and I said, oh, wow, can I do this? But I'm still having trouble. Really, I feel comfortable on a large piece, but I like to tame what I'm doing on these flash drawings on a real large surface. But that takes mops. It takes real huge brushes, you know, and I just...
You're not able to do it anymore.
My health... Lately, I've been in and out of the Veterans Administration, and I want to do it, but man.
I know there's so many complications to going big. I mean, it just seems like there were larger studios, and probably because the cost was a lot more affordable, but to get a studio now that allows you to do these large pieces are really impossible now.
It's impossible. I took 2 trips to New York City 10 years ago. And I was funded by my girlfriend, who I was dating at the time. Spent a week there and looked at rents. And they're already like 2,000. The last time I went, it was over 3,000 for not even a huge space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I said, my God, I can't afford a bathroom in New York City. So I better find something else, you know. So eventually, you know, I ended up in Michigan City.
Well, tell us a story about how you got the Brabant. I think that's an interesting story. I think you've told me that at the studio. Oh,
okay. That how I came up with the Brabant, I was disgusted. I went to New York. This was during the New York trips. They kind of ignored me because I told them I'm John from Indiana. And they said, oh, okay, we'll file this work, you know. So I come back all dejected. I talked to him, and we hashed it around. He came up, and he said, how about... We were born in Brabant province. And I said, yeah.
Yeah, I told him, I said, you know, we were born in Brabant. That's the province we were born in. I said, why don't you take that name and go as the artist known as Brabant? I mean, that sounds European or, you know, French or...
And you've used that before to great effect.
And that would give you, you know, a plug. People say, ooh, who is this Brabant, you know, and they want to check it out. Instead of just John Lenting, I mean, from Indiana, come on.
Yeah, they thought I was a corn farmer or something in New York. But since I changed my name, you know, at the first part now it's kind of slacked off because it's my own fault. I don't drive it enough. But I had interest from galleries that actually wanted nothing to do with me. And then they hear Brab on Lenting and they said, oh, can we see your work? You know, phony. I said, sure. But I wanted to say, you didn't want to show me before. I was John Lenting.
Well, that's how you got. I remember a story you told me a long time ago about how you got into a show in New York by using a different persona.
Yeah. That was a Lucas Samara show, and that was at the Richard Gray Gallery. And I was in town. I got done working. I had my suit on and everything, and I called. I couldn't get in at first. I rattled the door, and he said, "This guy, you know." So I said, oh, I got to come up with a plan because I want to see that show, you know. So I went to the phone booth. They didn't have cell phones yet. I called Richard Gray Gallery, and I said to the girl that answered the phone, pardon me, but I am flying in from Germany, and I'm really interested in Lucas Samara's work. What's your name? And I told her, you know, some Yope something. And I went back, same guy, and they let me in. And I got to meet Lucas Sabaris. I saw his work and stuff. So sometimes you got to do that, I guess.
I know you told a story to me once when I was at your gallery about you had pieces on thing, and some lady came in and wanted you to commission a work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's my very first studio in this
Miss
area.
Miss Canfield of Canfield Bottling.
Yeah, I had a studio in the Brown Building in Flossmoor, right? I'm working away. I'm a young guy, you know, and a lady walks in. She says, young man, I like your work. I said, good, look through the racks. Thing, you know. Whatever you want, we'll talk. She said, no, I want to commission you for a painting for my house. And she starts saying, my rug is this color, my sofa. I said, stop. I said, I don't work that way. I said, you can pick out anything you want in there and stuff, you know, and I'll give you a deal and all this stuff. So she said, well, okay, young man, well, you just lost the commission. I said, well, fine. And she's walking out, and I had on this, like, a door jam like this on the way out. I had a little doodle, like a stamp, similar to my flash drawings. Mm-hmm. She said, oh, this is nice. Is this for sale? I said, yeah. She said, how much you want for it? I told her, $50. Mm-hmm. So she takes out her checkbook, and I'm looking. I'm saying, Margie Canfield. She's writing out the check. You go, thanks. I said, oh, crap. Not that I wanted to play him anyway, but she was Margie Canfield from the Canfield Bottlers from Flossmoor.
Wow. Well, just think what you could have
created. So you didn't change that. You didn't change your mind on that commission, huh?
No. And I still
don't want to match those sofas.
I still don't do commissions. A lot of artists say, yeah, nothing wrong with it. I can handle a commission, but I can't. I get too tight. I'm too spontaneous.
Right.
You done too much of that when you're doing the billboards.
Well, that too, yeah. Hanging from a bosun chair in the middle of downtown and saying to my Mexican buddy who was painting on the other side, I said, man, we're making a mess, Jose. He said, no, senor, we take a break. We come down from the board and you take a look. It was like super realism.
No kidding.
Glass, you know, women, beautiful makeup, faces and stuff. But you get up there, when I was up there, it was all like splatters and paint. Well, you know, you can't get too nitpicky up there.
Right.
So that's how I first said, damn it, I'm going to be an abstract. I'm going to be an abstract artist. And that's how I got infatuated with
it. And too much realism in your life. So
yeah, too much realism. So. Too much.
So you can say the billboards did actually influence your outcome as an artist then.
Yes, very much so. I wish I could have kept going more, but the company in Chicago, Triangle Signs, was bought out by a big company from New York City, and they went completely vinyl.
Right.
Right.
That was the drawing, you know, the separation part of the hand-painted billboard versus the vinyl. And they said, we don't need pictorial artists no more. So,
wow.
Oh, thank you. Bye-bye.
Most of them today are all electronic, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when did you meet the guy gang that I met you with, like, 20 years ago with DePiro and... was it?
DePiro Richard, God bless his heart. Mm-hmm. He was a charming man and hell of a sculptor. Just he helped me a lot.
The most wonderful.
The most wonderful.
The
person.
Most wonderful.
And he used to, his wife used to get embarrassed. He said, Richard, stop. We'd go to these openings in Chicago and he'd start chatting with these old ladies. They were probably collectors. He said, hey. You see that guy? He was talking about me. He's a mafia art dealer. I said, stop. I'm not a mafia art dealer. And Karen
he brought so much magic into my life, DePiro.
Karen used to say, Richard, stop. It's not nice. You're embarrassing. But, man, he was – and then he had a little studio over there. And towards the end of his life, he bought a little building in what was that?
Brook,
Indiana. Beautiful place. Got a real deal on it. He paid like less than $30,000 for it. It was all brick.
Wow.
Never really got to do anything. He had so much junk in there. He couldn't turn around to do any work and stuff. So, you know.
You're listening to the Lentling Brothers, John and Giuseppe, on Art on the Air, WVLP, and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. You know, you can't get away today without mentioning your buddy Stephen.
Stephen Ios?
Yeah. Did you see
you
the thing?
Oh, you saw it, yeah.
And you're supposed to mention, I think, BB, which is somebody else's young dog.
Oh, God, I'll get in trouble then. Okay, I will.
Well, I did it for you, so how about that?
Oh, okay.
So.
BB, I love BB. Stephen Ios is a piece of work, too. He got inspired by me, so... he's got his little art collection now. He's bought several of my flash drawings.
Yeah.
Pays on time, you know.
Well, that's good. That's always good. Yeah. Well, you know, one thing, too, is that this is a First Friday. I assume you're going to have your place open on in Michigan City on First Friday.
Nope. Not until March.
Not until March.
Yeah. Oh, March is the start of First Fridays.
You know, I got this new lady now that moved back from New York. She's a performance artist. And...
Is she having something there?
Yeah. I'm looking forward to working with her this year because now there's two of us in that building, you know.
For she a wants long to do time. A video with you.
Yeah, well, she wants to do a lot of things. But, you know, there was nobody in that building for almost like 2 years except for me.
Yeah.
An exercise person and another.
Henry Schultz was in there for a while,
photography. It wasn't doing him any good, so he moved out. Carol Estes moved out.
Yeah, along with Rhonda. Yeah.
Along with Rhonda.
Rhonda, yeah.
And Rhonda, and then Linda moved out with Beach Bum Jewels and stuff, and it was empty.
Except for real estate,
back.
Right? Real
Nobody estate. Came back there no more, you know.
I try to well, every time I'm in Michigan City, I always try to hit there every time.
Well, you're a regular.
And I'd be there all the time if I didn't have my own place.
Yeah, I know. You got the same problem as I do. I want to get to the Lebesnik Center on First Friday, and I can never make it because I got to be at my...
Well, you can do it this weekend, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because there's Act 40.
And we have Drum Circle. We're open all year for First Friday at the Nest. We don't take a break.
Because I'll be there for at least a while for First Friday this Friday.
Okay, it's Friday now.
Yeah, it'll be later tonight from 5 to 8.
Well, later Friday tonight, today. Yeah. We'll see how that weather is out there.
I know, really.
I think it's going to clear up. Yeah. Being a weather geek like I am, we're getting lake effect. It's a real narrow strip.
It's said by 1 o'clock.
Yeah, it's going to be
cleared up.
Going east of us, and it's going to be sunny.
Out,
be fine.
60 degrees out.
Well, it won't be sunny.
Dream on, people.
May not be 60 degrees, but it may be freezing.
I just met my younger brother from California, Leo, right? He's about in his 50s. He's a long-distance runner. He never pays attention to anything I do on Facebook. But his best buddy that he drinks with is there every day, Ron Roundy. He's an artist himself, and he compliments me and everything. And it just gets me, man.
that Leo is in his own little world.
San Luis Obispo.
Yeah.
And he's an artist in his own right. I taught him how to run back in the early days. My dad used to chase me around the block because I upset my mom, and he'd come in huffing and puffing. About a half hour later, I'd be hiding in the closet, and he'd say, "Where is that guy? He runs like a gazelle." Gosh, I'm going to beat the heck out of him.
I remember that. It was in the middle of the night. I was up, and all of a sudden, shoom. He jumps out.
Yeah.
The old man right behind him. You're good. Yelling. All the lights in the neighborhood went on. Yeah. He went around the block. He come huffing and puffing back.
You boys.
I could have been somebody too, because the
coach hid in the bedroom. But the old man high school. Said, the old man come in and said, "Where is that guy? That son of a bitch runs like a gazelle."
Anyway, Coach Jacob, I from Bloom Township High School, tried real hard to entice me into joining their track team, which I probably should have done, but me, you know, chasing the girls, and I had to get a crew cut back in those days. You couldn't. I had long hair, so that was out. And so my younger brother got interested in the running, and I taught him how to run. We used to run together, and I used to run maybe 10 miles a day in my younger days.
Wow.
And he got a scholarship to University of Kentucky in Lexington, and then he went on to San Luis Obispo. He won the state meet at Bloom Township High School because he was after me. He's still in the foyer there. He got a picture of him.
Record books.
And he still holds the record for the long distance running. So I kind of missed my ball, but there's no regrets. I mean, at least he worked out, and he's got a good job now with a sport company, going to different colleges over the country, selling, running equipment and stuff like that. And
pole vaulting equipment.
And teaching young kids in college and high school. And so he's happy, and, I did my job, I guess. He turned out real well, so.
So when you are reopened, how would people get in touch with you if they were interested in your work? I know it's like first of all, becoming your Facebook friend is probably the easiest
way.
Larry,
that's a problem because I post something a week or two before, and just Facebook just isn't it. It doesn't get – I get two hits on it, and I need another source, to spread the word when I start up again this year. And it'll probably be better because that lady from New York is there now.
Right.
And I look forward to her crowd coming in. And, the first, before we closed this last season, when she first got the studio, she brought in a couple from New York, right? They come into my studio.
He had a little, it's phenomenal work. 100%.
This guy had little Philip Glass glasses, the architectural glasses.
He's definitely a collector.
And he started saying, "De Kooning." I said, "Holy, hey, you know something about that?" "That's not a De Kooning." I said, "That's a Brabham." He says, "I know it. I know. I like your work," he says. And so they looked at my flash drawings, and his wife was an interior. She owns an interior design firm, a big one. And they bought, I think, 3 flash drawings from me. But they said they were going to come back for the bigger works, but I'll wait for that material. I've had many people, even from Long Beach, come in and say, "Oh, I love that. I love that painting. I love it." The wife is saying to her husband, he overheard it because he's always there. And they don't know he was the artist. And the husband goes to her, "Honey, I don't think I can live with that."
Yeah.
So that was several others. I had a whole restaurant tour come in. His wife used to take me on the side. "We're going to come back and get one of these big paintings." Yeah, they never happened either. So
you just need someone actually to market you so you can be creative. You need someone
else. I shy away from that because I'm a starving artist and I don't want to pay somebody big bucks to try to represent me. But there's got to be somebody out there that can get me in the right circles.
Well, even someone who might be interning in marketing or something like one of the local universities might be a help. And
Yeah, know. Greg Hertzstein was a big help. You know, he gave me that little show over right. there. And by the way, he called me, you know, 2 weeks ago. He said, hey, well, I'm not going to throw his voice. That's not nice. I could do him real good. Yeah. He said, hey, Brabant, we had a movie crew in here. I don't really know what they're, but they filmed your paintings. He said, now they want the rights from you to, you know, have them in the movie so you get credits. I said, yeah, sure. Yeah, what do I do? You know, I sent him the stuff. I haven't heard nothing yet. I don't even know what kind of film it is. I don't think Greg knows what kind of film it is.
Yeah.
It might be a documentary. It might be something for television. I don't know.
I know, one, you know, because we're on. I'm also involved with Lakeshore Public PBS, and they do a segment called "Eye on the Arts," and I put your name on that. So, right. so hopefully, we can hook you up with them, and they can do a little segment for you on television. Yeah. They do a radio segment, but that's only like 7 minutes. But you know, it'd be nice to. I already put your name out there. So if you hear from them, from Eye on the Arts, probably Tony Santucci.
I've seen
Tony
Santucci.
He's the producer.
On television.
Yeah.
Lakeshore,
damn it. And I don't know their number. You know, some numbers I don't recognize. I don't answer the phone.
Okay. Well, the main number though, I'll give you that off air. But
all right.
But okay. I've already put it. I've sent them. You know, because with our art show, I said, well, I want to get. This show is about promoting artists, and right. I said, "Well, this is a perfect." Yeah, I said, "What an interesting character to put on camera." So I think you guys would be great on the camera.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I mean, you know, every little thing would help.
Sure,
because I'm still trying, even at my age and my health, I'm still trying to get to New York, but it's like almost next to impossible. You know, I can get in a group show there once in a while.
Yeah.
What about, you're always like patronizing Zhao Bi. Is there any, is Sergio, is he able to?
No, Sergio, I've heard.
Has he been out to see your work?
No, he doesn't even on LinkedIn. I've been posting these flash drawings. He never responds to LinkedIn. I don't know what it is. I never done nothing to the guy, so I can't say, you know, that, but.
I know he just recently quit his teaching job.
He's got all his own people. This is what Lou Shields told me years ago. Lou Shields went to Italy with him to an exhibit that Sergio put together. And Lou came back and he told me, you know, in confidence, no, I'm not showing with him no more. He said he's, you know, he kind of told me that he's all for himself, for the glory and, you know, whatever. So that showed me, and I've been watching him, and it's true. If you don't like or go crazy over his work, he won't say a thing about your work.
Well, and he's got his wife helping him out with marketing also.
Oh, yeah, so. His wife is a professional too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Well, we have just about not quite a whole minute left. Any final thoughts you have for our audience, either one of you?
Well, if you're around First Friday in about a month or maybe another month.
In March.
Stop in at 617.
Stop in
at Franklin.
Or would you,
Street,
like if they sent you a message, would you go open up the gallery for them too?
In action.
Oh, yeah, I've done that already. Yeah. I've done that for people from Chicago, yeah.
I know, it's a good thing to do.
Anoush is one of them. She was just there not too long ago. You know, she loved my work. I was with her at the Art Institute. You know,
well, your work is truly exceptional. It's just,
well, thank you.
Just I think everybody should go and see your gallery.
That, Esther,
thank you.
Well, we appreciate having you guys on the show. This
thank
was
you.
A, this
we
was
appreciate
a
given the opportunity to be on the air.
And we'll have you back to tell some more of your stories there. You've been listening to Art of the Air.
We have a lot more of them.
There we go. Art of the Air. And I'd like to thank the Lentling brothers, John Robin Lentling and Giuseppe.
Art in the Air would like to thank you for listening to our special podcast edition, saluting the life and legacy of John Brabant Lenting. Esther and I thank you for listening to Art on the Air.
Our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. Underwriters for Art in the Air, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments, and Mary Levan, Arts Patron. Art in the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there. So don't just be an Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so, so we continue to bring you great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.